Having hoed so many weeds as a boy growing up in Montana, and cleaned so many stalls and stacked so many bales of hay, I never thought I would be making the following statement, but I am going to. One of the great tragedies of the industrialization of our agriculture is that we have taken our youth off the land and thrust them into the city where there is little meaningful employment for them. There, I said it, and I do mean it. And furthermore, today I pause to ask, where can our youth find meaningful employment?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 529th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards and producers Carol Stafford and Rebecca Rukeyser working hard on the shows. Folks, you see them hanging on the street corners of many cities, dressed in hooded black sweatshirts, like a gang of delinquent druids looking for opportunity that never seems to come. They are our youth and our future. Oh, sure, some of them find opportunity working shoulder to shoulder with a recently arrived, shoveling hamburger patties into buns and then into cars, but hey, is that the kind of employment that teaches an importance of responsibility and the joy of a job well done? No, it isn't. And so today we wonder, where can our youth find meaningful employment? Here to help us find an answer, we have Leo Goldsmith from Woof, USA. Leo, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Now, what the heck is Woof?
Well, Woof is an acronym that stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. So we are part of a worldwide effort.
So, and what is the core responsibility of your job? What do you do there?
The main thing that we do is we produce a directory of over 600 organic farms in the United States who would like to host volunteers on their farm.
Well, good. You're also a chef.
This is true, yes. I work, besides farming here in Western Sonoma County, in the evenings I work as a chef at a local French bistro in Occidental, California, and
And you have a farm, Soul
yes.
Food Farm, S-O-L?
Yes, that's right. Soul Food Farm is located in Sebastopol, California, and we are about a 3-acre CSA and market garden, mm-hmm. and yeah, we've been running and certified organic for 3 years now,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, all of this stems out of basically my first experience with Woof, which happened about 7-8 years ago.
What was that?
Before
we go there, let me ask you a personal question. How did you become a foodie? Why did you become a foodie?
Well, that's a good question. I became a foodie. I was maybe one of those delinquent druids at one point that you were referring to in the introduction. But
they look like delinquent druids, don't they? Hanging around the street corner in hooded sweatshirts is like, uh-oh.
Yes. But I, my personal experience with how I got to be a foodie was I had migrated myself from growing up in Southern California to Berkeley and suddenly had found myself just slowing down a lot and questioning a lot more of what I was doing and what makes me who I am. I was about 20 years old at the time, and really started looking at what I was eating. And
were your parents farmers, right?
No, my parents weren't farmers at all. They are both medical type people.
So they're professionals, yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't, you know, again, we grew up in Southern California. Mm-hmm. There was not a lot of farmland around, and what was left was disappearing quickly. Didn't really get my hands too dirty as a kid, but mm-hmm. at this time that I'm speaking about, I just started looking at my diet and wondering where my food was coming from and started tuning into the importance of eating organically, and for me it was important eating vegetarian as well.
There it is. So you just developed this revolutionary consciousness that Burger King wasn't the place, right?
Exactly. I was never a huge fan of the King. But
okay.
Yeah, and began studying ecosystemology at Berkeley and found that that was really what I wanted to be doing, was working with food. And my main goal as a farmer personally is to feed people good food. So people farm for all types of different reasons, but I'm really interested in bringing that food out and presenting it to people in an accessible, enjoyable way.
Like you do at the restaurant.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, also with us today, we have Rebecca Rukeyser, who is a college senior, a senior at the University of California in creative writing, and also a woofer, right, Rebecca? But also the new story producer here on the Food Chain. So welcome aboard for all kinds of reasons.
Well, thank you.
Got to move right up on that microphone now.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Let's see. Your parents were, you have a college professor, anthropology teacher, you have a marketing professor. How did you get involved in this woofing thing?
Well, I wanted to take a gap year after I graduated from high school, and it would actually all began with leafing through a pile of National Geographics that I had lying around my house, and I noticed an article about fruit bat rehabilitation centers in Queensland, Australia.
Been there.
And I thought, you know, the bats were very cute, and I was very interested in what was going on with fruit bat rehabilitation. And I started doing some internet research, and lo and behold, there, courtesy of Woof Australia, was a place that I could go in Atherton, Queensland, where I could work with infant fruit bats. And after that, I went to Australia. I joined Woof Australia while in Australia, and just started
woofing your way around.
Woofing my way around, yeah.
Good. Well, let's talk about Woof now. Worldwide organization, worldwide opportunities on organic farms. Is that right, Leo?
That's right.
Is that right?
That is absolutely right.
Well, who invented this whole notion?
Well, it was invented actually by a woman named Sue Coppard, and this was in 1971, and she was a London secretary who, her intention was to provide people living in the city an opportunity to participate in the organic farming movement that was occurring in the countryside. When she coined WOOF, she called it Working Weekends on Organic Farms, and that idea,
because it was probably a local thing, right?
Yeah, and just sort of designed for city folks to get out on their time off. And since the establishment of WOOF in the UK, the program has expanded and is now called Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. It's now in more than 28 countries around the world with a wide range of farm stay opportunities.
So how exactly does it work? Do people sign up and pay a fee, and then what happens?
Right. Yeah, we produce the book, like I said. That's really our main function, is to produce this book, which takes a lot of work and organization and printing and all that kind of stuff. But people join up, and then they receive the book. And from then on, we've set out some guidelines on how to proceed with contacting farms and arranging stays. But it really, we leave it up to the two parties to work out what's going to work best for both of them, because farmers have such unique needs, and the woofers, the traveling volunteers, also may have unique needs. But in general, that's the idea, is just to receive the booklet, and from then on, there's no money exchange between the farmer and the volunteer. We generally suggest staying at least 2 to 3 days. Otherwise, it can be a bit disruptive for a farmer.
Right.
And the exchange, again, you're not being paid for the work, nor are you paying for the stay, but it is an exchange of education and a half a day's work on the farm for the full day's accommodation. And
that's room and board?
Room and board, right.
Wow. Now, do you have trouble finding farmers that want to participate in this?
Actually, we it's been growing very steadily. Farmers, I think, are interested in it because they are going to get, I mean, me being a farmer during the season, it's very intense up here on our land, and we don't get a whole lot of outside interaction
right.
with folks except at the farmer's market, which I absolutely love. But if you're a Woof host, farmers seem to be interested in it because, first of all, they're getting free labor from people that are motivated and interested in learning about farming. Big plus. And second of all, there is this kind of a cultural exchange. As it is worldwide, we see a lot of people coming here to Woof from across the globe.
Uh-huh.
So there's that benefit, too, for the farmers. We don't have as much, or we have more of a focus right now on reaching, just as you opened up the show, reaching people who are interested in going out and visiting these farmers.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson right back, and we're going to go woofing. Do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about where our youth can find gainful employment. Working on farms and ranches around the world. And we have with us Leo Goldsmith, who is the founding director for Woof USA in Felton, California. Also Rebecca Rukeyser, who is a senior in creative writing at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Also the new producer here on The Food Chain. So welcome both of you. We were talking about, when we went to the break, we were talking about the benefits that woofers can provide farmers. They get a little bit of free labor, and they get some new people coming on the farm and meeting new people. Calls to mind when I went back to Montana to take a job on a ranch in the middle of my schooling here in California, and I got a connection with a great ranch that my brother had worked on before. I probably would have never gotten the job, but this family kind of adopted me, and I became their own hippie. And they had their own California hippie, so I was a object of much derision and also attention throughout the landscape up there in the high prairies of Montana. But it was fun because they brought a very special, you know, quality to me and a quality of life, and I brought this, I guess, spice to their family too. So it was a mutual admiration society that we had going on there. Let me ask both of you how you got involved with woofing, because I've never even heard of this before. Before I was giving a speech here a couple of months ago up in Washington and Seattle, and the farm at which I was staying also hosted three volunteers, two from Peru and one from Japan, and I thought it would be so fun to have these people on the radio to talk about their experiences of meeting a different culture, meeting different people, and they look like they were having so much fun. So I started snooping around, and I found this outfit called Woof, and that's how we ended up on this show today. So how did you find Woof, Leo?
Well, the way that I found Woof was after I had moved to Berkeley, as I described earlier, mm-hmm. and was considering where my food was coming from, I decided that I didn't want to go back to school right away. I had more discovering to do and along this path of ecology and farming. So I had heard about woofing from a friend who had done it in New Zealand, and I said, this sounds great. I can travel around for free visiting amazing farms and get to see parts of the countryside in Australia that I can't even find on the map. So I ordered my directory from Woof Australia and flew down there, not knowing anyone or having any plan, and hit the farms and had so many incredible experiences.
So you had no contact with any of the farmers before you went down there?
I had no contact before going.
The things you can do when you're very young, huh?
Hey, yes, but anyone can do it, because at my first Woof farm, I woofed alongside a man from India. This man was in his late 70s, a retired Indian Airlines jumbo jet pilot, wow. who now was, just like me, hitting the road and wanted to go, you know, make some impact in this organic farming world. And I had trouble keeping up with this man. He had to He was a real workhorse, and that's another benefit of woofing is, as a woofer, the people that are volunteering, you really get to meet people from around the world, like you're describing with the two Peruvian people and mm-hmm. the Japanese person on one farm in America.
And, boy, the discussions that you can have are just amazing. Rebecca, how did you get involved? You were briefed us a little bit, but fill us in now.
Yeah, I was down in Australia, and I wasn't aware of...
Were you a young lady? Were you on your own?
I was 17 when I was first down there, and I really had no idea about farming. I had no idea about organics. I really had no idea, and I... found
were you traveling on your own?
No, I was with a friend. I didn't know that the place I was staying was part of WWF, and I learned about it, and I decided just to travel from there, and we went all over the country, and it really started as a reaction against staying in, you know, your standard backpacker accommodations, which, you know, besides being expensive, get a little oppressive at times, and I wanted to go out and see the countryside, and I fell in love with farming and organic farming in particular. I mean, it started out as a way of traveling around, and I fell in love with the lifestyle.
Leo, how many farms did you work on down there?
My first trip, I worked on 4 different farms up and down the east coast of Australia, and then came back a few years later, as soon as I could get the resources together, I wanted to go back, and someone who's involved in our committee that runs WWF, she was doing her thesis through Community Studies, University of California, Santa Cruz, on intentional communities and how they are dealing with the genetic engineering presence of foods. So she was in New Zealand WWFing for several months, and I rendezvoused with her down there with another person that, in the consequently, the 3 of us, along with 4 other friends, after woofing around, came back to Santa Cruz, and we said, why don't they have this here? And then we said, who's they, and why don't we start this? So that was kind of the birth of it, was us getting out there down under and doing woofing. And then coming home and saying, you know, we need to get it together around here and make this opportunity exist.
So this is kind of spreading like Johnny Appleseed, right? Like
yeah,
a bunch of Johnny Appleseeds running around. And
yeah.
And so how many farms did you work on in all?
In total, I probably worked on maybe 15, a dozen or 15 different organic farms.
What was your average day?
Average day... Well, they're so different. Like I said, you know, we set out the outline, but an average day was, you know, I was coming from a point of not having much experience in the beginning, but, you know, so sometimes the work might be working with the farmer to figure out how to use certain hand tools and to do harvesting for the farmer's market that afternoon.
Did they teach you how to sharpen a hoe?
I learned that somewhere else.
What are those very important skills in life?
That's one of the first things we're going to teach woofers here on Soul Food Farm. I also just wanted to mention something before to clear up anything, that we use the word organic in the acronym WWF, but the farms that are included don't need to be USDA certified organic. I just wanted to make that clear, that anyone who's growing ecologically and without the use of manufactured chemical input is welcome to be listed in our directory. And that includes everything from school gardens, cafe gardens, large CSAs, and everything in between. But our only requirement and what you'll find of anyone listed in the directory is that in some way, shape, or form, they're growing organically.
Now, do these farms have to be, handicap-enabled? What kind of facilities do they provide you?
That also is left up in the directory to the description of the farm. It's very difficult to answer that, but like I said, our general outline is that you're just able to accommodate and folks. But we do ask, if you want to become a host, we suggest in your profile things like, what languages do you speak? Mm-hmm. Can you host children or pets?
And families do this, you mean?
Yeah, families do this.
Oh.
Of course, to become an independent member, you have to be 18, but if you're traveling with a guardian, we are absolutely encouraging youth to get out there. And it's the thing of, I mean, as I think Rebecca and I both experienced, that once you get a taste of what it's like, especially for me coming from a place where I never had experienced it,
right.
It's a really important thing and does lead to, you know, a meaningful experience and a real feeling of satisfaction and cooperation and community building. So
there you go.
Yeah, it's a very positive thing.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to go woofing with Rebecca here and see where she went and what she experienced. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Mike Lolson. We're talking woofing, worldwide opportunities on organic farms for you. Do stay tuned right back. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about woofing around with Leo Goldsmith, who is the founding one of the founding directors of Woof USA in Felton, California. We also have Rebecca Rukeyser, who is a senior at the University of California, majoring in creative writing. And by golly, she's now the producer, one of the producers at KS of the Food Chain Radio, and happy to have her aboard. Rebecca, let's turn to you. You started out woofing because you wanted to tend fruit bats on the northeast coast of Australia.
Yes. Yes, I did. And I'm glad.
So you're a 17-year-old girl working on a fruit bat farm in the jungles of northern Australia.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
What was that like?
The fruit bats were really cute. I got to bottle feed the infants, and it was wonderful. I mean, they were absolutely adorable.
Uh-huh.
And then decided to travel around. Like Leo was talking about, a lot of the places that I stayed at were not, you know, what you think of when you think of organic farms. I worked at actually a couple pubs in Australia and then New Zealand after that, and they had, you know, a small salad garden out
uh-huh.
back. So there was, you know, a small amount of...
You didn't happen to meet any characters, did you?
Oh, every day. I mean, I think that was one of the high points of my trip was
uh-huh.
just the range of people, mm-hmm. the range of people and the range of ages of woofers was really amazing to me.
Well, at 17, you must have been one of the youngest out there on your own, right?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I was traveling with a friend who was 20 at the time,
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, that...
Did you ever find yourself in any trouble?
No. I mean, that was, again, one of the wonderful things about it. I mean, there were a couple uncomfortable moments standing in the rain, calling host after host after host, and not really having an itinerary, which is definitely something, when I go back woofing, I'll be sure to have more of, but...
So you don't think you've grown out of this? You think you're still interested in being a woofer?
Well, like Leo said, I mean, I want to continue doing this as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that now that I've had a taste of this, I wouldn't really want to travel any other way.
How many farms did you work on in Australia?
In Australia, six. And about six in New Zealand
uh-huh.
as well.
Tell us about some of them. What were they like?
It was a wide variety. I mean, there was really everything from I worked at a roadhouse in the middle of the Northern Territories at, you know, a 9%
up by Darwin.
No, it was closer down to Alice Springs.
Okay. Out in the middle of nowhere.
Out in the middle of nowhere. you know, a lot of lovely tropical
uh-huh.
places, a taro farm, a mango
yeah.
orchard. I mean, when I go back, I'd like to stay somewhere. The longest that I stayed anywhere was 3 weeks, which, you know, again, with knowing now what I didn't know then, I'd want to stay places longer. But I came back and raved to pretty much everyone and tried to make as many converts to woofing as possible.
Yeah. Leo, how long what was the longest time you spent on a farm?
The longest time I spent on a farm was when we began Woof USA. It's the first farm that was listed was a farm that I was interning on in Carmel Valley, and I was there about 4 months.
Who's that?
It's called James Creek Farm, mm-hmm. and it's way up in the valley on the edge of the Ventana Wilderness.
Oh, good.
Yes, and and that's the thing, too. Like, Rebecca, you're mentioning the length of stays. We have included in the Wolf USA directory, the beginning of the directory list, longer term, like full season, apprenticeship style things, because some farmers and some woofers are looking specifically for that, not just for the working holiday. So we've made that opportunity available in our directory to seek that out.
Did both of you like the physical labor of, you know, working on farms, Rebecca?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
have you ever done work like that before?
Yeah, I had done work like that, and it's fun. I mean, I never, since my length of stay was pretty short, I didn't get to really develop a well-rounded skill base. But I mean, pruning and weeding and painting and, you know, the just doing things that needed to
work.
Done was,
yeah.
I enjoyed it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Leo?
Yeah, I agree. It's really satisfying work. And, of course, now I am a full-time life farmer and will be doing that. It's something I really enjoy. But the experience through Wolf included, yeah, hard work. And that's a beautiful thing, to be outdoors. And, again, when you're woofing, you get to go to places and meet people and be a part of a community or family or just an interrelationship with one person that is just not available in any other way. It really creates a unique experience of interaction in a place.
Yeah, Rebecca, who is the most colorful character that you worked with in terms of farmers?
That would be hard. I mean, there was such a range.
Mm-hmm. They were all pretty much characters?
For the most part, I think mm-hmm. that just having, like Leo was talking about, that very close interaction with, my hosts were usually a later middle-aged couple, mm-hmm. and since I was traveling with someone who was also young, there was, I think their own children had flown the nest, and I think there was a nice kind of relationship to be had there. But just that close proximity, I mean, it'll turn people that might be colorful characters in any other respect, if you had spent less time with them, into, you know, fully fleshed people that I stayed in contact with afterwards.
Oh, you did stay in contact?
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Leo? Did you keep remain in contact with the farms at which you worked?
Yes, I have. But a lot of times what that kind of contact is I will recommend to someone, oh, you're going to New Zealand to go woofing.
Okay.
You've got to go to Tui Community at the foot of the Abel-Tasman Trail and tell, you know, these folks that I'm still sending my love, that kind of thing. Just thinking about, you know, the places, unique places, some of them that we have in America include, like, there's a wolf sanctuary in Colorado, and that's just, you know, you can go out to this place and stay there and help them out, and, you know, they have a small home garden, but it happens to be on this sanctuary for wolves. And also, you can preview our entire directory, all the descriptions of the farms online at our website before you purchase it. It would just be not including the contact information for the folks.
Mm-hmm.
But our website is woofusa.org, and it's spelled woofusa.org.
And that's how you get tuned in.
That's how you get tuned in. You can also find out how to become a member and how to become a host and get some frequently asked questions. And like I say, most useful is to be able to preview the entire directory.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what lessons these young people learned as they were woofing around Australia, New Zealand, and parts of the world. And I'd like to hear about some of the other parts of the world where we can woof around, having just been in Australia last couple times over the last few years. I'm looking for some other place that might be interesting to travel. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Okay, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're woofing around with Leo Goldsmith, who is one of the founding directors of Woof USA here in Felton, California. Also Rebecca Rukeyser, who is a senior at the University of California, creative writing and woofer, and now producer of the Food Chain radio program. Where else? You both of you seem to end up in Australia, New Zealand. Incidentally, did you detect a difference in the personality of Australians and New Zealanders?
Absolutely.
Yes.
You did? Tell me about it. Rebecca, you first.
I'd say, on the whole, the Australians that I encountered were, by and large, rowdier than the New Zealanders.
Yeah.
By and large, yeah.
By and large, yeah.
Yeah, I think it for me, is almost similar to Canadian and American.
Yes.
If that is any type of analogy people can understand.
I always thought of it as the difference between a country that was settled by farmers and gardeners and a country that was settled by convicts. Maybe that has a way of describing the difference, because they are so different, those two countries. It's just amazing. And what a wonderful way to learn about the country and the people. So much more interesting than staying in hostels, because you really have the opportunity to meet people. What other parts of the world? You said there's 28 countries that are participating in this?
Yeah, and actually this year we had our second annual conference of all the international WOOF groups that me and our WOOF other director, Jessica Brody, attended in Japan, hosted by WOOF Japan. So we're really working together. Other places that you can go woofing.
Oh, Japan would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was really amazing, and we went out to a farm, too. It was called Jam and Eggs. They made blueberry jam and raised laying hens.
Wow. Jam and eggs.
Yeah. Other places, though, like the United Kingdom's where it started, and Austria has a woof, Canada, Denmark, Finland, Germany, Ghana, Italy, Korea, Nepal, Slovenia, Switzerland, Sweden, Togo, and more are emerging. And a large part of our conference is to help promote these existing WOOF groups, as well as help other countries where they're just trying to get it off the ground to have that happen, such as WOOF France right now. They're very close to launching. And So
there's a WOOF in Italy.
There is, and Mr. Alan Pink, who runs that, is an absolutely amazing man who has worked so hard. And in Italy, there's just gorgeous gastronomic and agricultural opportunities. Somewhere that I'm going to...
Yeah, my stomach growling just the prospect of working and woofing around Italy. That's, what could be more fun than that? Well, let me ask both of you, what life lessons did you learn by becoming a woofer? You were both kids fresh from home and going out into the world. Rebecca, you have a nice crease in your brow.
I learning how to work, I think, was so valuable coming out of.
Did you learn how to enjoy working?
Yeah, I mean, I had before, but I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, when you don't have to, there's the tendency to not, and just getting into the habit and being outside every day. I mean, that wasn't something that I had all that much experience with, and was definitely something the best lesson I learned was just the enjoyment of being outside more than anything else, and trying to develop some skill with my hands, even though, like I said, it was very rudimentary. But I mean, that sort of compounded all the lessons that you get from traveling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Leo?
I just love your answer, Rebecca. I think that's so great, especially with the theme of this program being where can youth learn meaningful skills. That's awesome. And I think for me personally, I learned a lot about intentional communities. A lot of the places that I went wolfing at were like commune-style groups.
What do you mean intentional community?
Well, I guess in America we call it more communes. It's just a group of people that decide to live more or less independently from, the typical...
So we intend to form a community.
Yeah, we intend to form a community and grow our food.
Mm-hmm. And that's what an intentional
community
is.
Raise our children together and such things like that. And I visited a few communities, and I still have a goal in my own life, actually with a lot of these folks that were running Woof, to... We've sort of merged the two ideas of having a community and running Woof, and we have a future vision of having like a demonstration farm and an international welcoming center for woofers and be able to live together. That's really something that has stayed with me a lot from my woofing experience, was seeing these communities of multiple families coexisting and supporting each other. And yeah, like I said, food and raising children together.
You know, I know a bunch of people on the island of Cyprus who might get behind a woofing program there. And
cool.
A beautiful, beautiful island to woof around. That would be a great one, too. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We're talking about woofing, which is worldwide opportunities on organic farms, how young people, old people, middle-aged people, anybody, essentially, can woof their way around the world on volunteering to work on a farm. You work a half day, and you get a whole day's worth of room and board. Wow. And then you get to hang around and meet people. Interesting stuff. Do stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Rebecca and Leo how to get the most out of woofing for all of you listeners. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. Food Chain here. Michael Olson, your host of the day. We have a few minutes left. We're woofing around the world with Leo Goldsmith, who is the founding director of Woof USA here in Felton, California. Also Rebecca Rukeyser, senior at the University of California in creative writing, and also a woofer in her very young youth, 17 years old, flew the coop, woofed around Australia and New Zealand. First of all, step number one is, how do people woof? What's step number one in becoming a woofer? Leo?
There is... Our website, again, is www.woofusa.org. That's W-O-O-F-U-S-A. And there you can link to all of the woof organizations around the world, and most of them give all the information about joining online.
There you go. So it's as simple as logging on and tuning in. Now I want to ask the more important question. How do you get the most out of your woofing experience? Both of you have woofed. Teach us what your mistakes have taught you. What's the best way to get the most out of this experience, Rebecca?
Well, I really liked what Leo was talking about the intentional community that you come across with woofing. But I think, you know, tying into the what lessons I learned question, I think also the unintentional community that you're just kind of thrown together with, was one of the best things about woofing for me. And I'd just say, you know, some of my best experiences at farms were with people that I hadn't been my first choice, in situations that hadn't been my first choice, and they turned out to be the best. So just, I don't know, the open-mindedness served me well.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that would be my...
Love the serendipity would be your...
That's a way of putting it, yes.
Okay, Leo?
Well, I want to say, first of all, it's real important to have clear communication can help set a good groundwork, meaning when I am going to ring up on the telephone a farm and say, hello, I'd like to come and woof, just be clear. Talk about the work that's expected. Talk about the off-farm experiences. Talk about if you have the special, you know, food preference, things like that. That would be number one to make the most out of woofing, is have clear communication with your host. And then the other part, once you arrive, is just like Rebecca said, I think, is just participate and activate and engage in what's going on and absorb and share. It's really an educational exchange, too, because I've had experiences with woofers saying, hey, even though you're the farmer here, I've seen this technique done at a different farm. So as a farmer, you can be learning from your woofers as well. It's the obvious other way around, woofers learning from farmers.
Yeah.
And enjoy. I mean, you will look back on your woofing experiences, as we are today, with great fondness and like a longing to return to it. So.
Well, one quick question. Both of you just went and then called up people as you were traveling along, like you were saying, Rebecca, standing in the rain calling woof farmers. Do you recommend planning ahead, or do you recommend just jumping on the boat and going? Rebecca?
I'm certainly going to do more planning ahead next time. It was definitely enjoyable woofing by the seat of my pants.
What do you think, Leo?
Well, Rebecca, I also have stood in the rain driving up woofers.
Common experience, right?
But, you know, I don't necessarily wish that it had been different. Maybe that memory has softened a little bit.
We're out of time here. We've got to go. But I do want to thank Leo Goldsmith, Rebecca Rukeyser for joining us, and I'll thank all of you for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.